Hello and welcome to a special summer series of A Big Country. I'm Edwina Farley. Over the next few weeks, we're bringing you some of our favourite stories from around regional Australia. And we're starting off with food. Lots of food to get you through the festive season. In Tasmania, home gardeners are being encouraged to grow edible native plants. Bush tucker is also on the menu in the Kimberley when Matt Brand goes looking for bush bananas. We see how ugly and unwanted fruit and vegetables can be turned into an edible powder. And we visit a specialist flower farm off the coast of Brisbane. It's one of the prettiest farms you're likely to see.
Every day is different, and you just come to the farm and it's just full of the smells and the colours, and it just engulfs you as a person. And I was just very much at peace here, and I'm a very creative person, so it just made my juices flow.
Lisa Brooks is a very enthusiastic volunteer at Pretty Produce on Lamb Island. We'll meet her and the rest of the team a bit later. But first to Tasmania, where Reese Campbell is stocking up her larder.
So this is the first garden, okay? This is a southern garden, and this is the snowberry, which is, everybody knows about the snowberry, which is a beautiful fruit that grows. But the native violet has an edible flower.
Ooh.
Not particularly.
First taste.
Yep. But it makes the most beautiful violet jelly. It's absolutely exquisite.
Reese Campbell is on a mission. She wants Tasmanians to embrace their island state's native edible plants and hopefully get them growing in their own backyards. Hello, I'm Margot Kelly. Reese Campbell has an acre planted out in this garden in Wynyard in Tasmania's northwest. Already, there's more than 100 edible wild foods growing here.
And here's another one. Look at this. This is the creeping strawberry plum pine. And as you can see, there's tiny little strawberries growing on this pine. And the taste, again, is extraordinary. It is a combination of strawberries and pine. And this is where Tasmanian fruit's so valuable. It's a tiny fruit, but the amount of flavour in such a minuscule fruit will spread out. So you could use that in a jar of jam made with apples or something, and the taste will go right through it.
All right, let's try.
Yeah, I know. It's amazing,
wow.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Oh, and then a little bit peppery at the end.
Yeah, there's a lot of Tasmanian fruits have that astringency, that bite and astringency, which is one of the reasons where all those poison myths came in. Because it tastes like it's going to dry your mouth out, people think it must be poisonous. But very few of them are. This is our garden. We call it Murnong Wild Food Garden because we're planting all the edible Tasmanian plants here. We've got almost an acre in downtown Wynyard, and we've got over 100 edible Tasmanian native plants in here.
Edible? How nutritious?
The nutrition varies hugely. A lot of the fruits are not very nutritious. Tasmanian wild fruit lacks nutrition. A lot of it is just basically sugary water. But equally, a lot of the tuber plants and some of the others are quite highly nutritious. In fact, the Murnong, which is a species of daisy, of dandelion really, which was widespread all over southern Australia, Victoria, New South Wales, South Australia and here. And it was a staple carbohydrate of the first Australians. And within 30 years of white settlement, it was just about made extinct by sheep, by farming and by compaction of the soil. So that's why we call this Murnong. We're bringing that back.
While Indigenous Australians understood and used these wild foods, European settlers weren't so keen. There was a social stigma attached to eating these native plants and berries.
One of the reasons why we've lost the knowledge is because if you were white and ate bush food, you were poor, so you didn't report that. And if you were Aboriginal for a long time in Tasmania, that was a very negative thing to acknowledge. So you didn't acknowledge that Aboriginal heritage either. So you were caught between those two groups of people who did not want to acknowledge what they were actually eating.
And certainly it seems that in the colonial times, replicating what was done in Britain in this amiable climate in Tasmania was seen as the best way to move society forward rather than create a hybridised new Tasmanian approach to food?
Absolutely. Well, the naturalisation society did just that. Very early on, within 30 or 40 years of white settlement in Tasmania, there were already hundreds of plants. Look at our blackberry, our hawthorn, our boxthorn. All of those were naturalised here within a very short time. So people went to some efforts to bring the blackberry over and the raspberry over to harvest instead of picking our own native raspberries.
Not content just to grow these edible plants, Rhys transforms them into an array of jams, chutneys and preserves to show just how versatile they can be.
Yep, okay, so let's go to the kitchen.
I've just made a jam from...
Lovely.
This is a jam made from caprosma and crabapple, biliardiera and caprosma. So, yeah. That's the crabapples to go in the jelly.
Okay, so we have all the... These are dessert sauces with the... that's that tiny little berry I was talking to you about, the little currant berry. Lots of jams and chutneys. Even pickled seaweed, pickled samphire, all sorts of things. There's a chutney made 80% from bull kelp. Yep.
Oh, I can't imagine that would be too nice.
It's lovely. It's really lovely. It's an earthy, robust, beautiful chutney and fabulous for Tasmanians because of our iodine deficiency.
Mmm.
Something like good old lemon curd, but it's made with the lemon baronia as a flavouring as well as the lemon. And I was telling you about the native violet, the jelly from the native violet flower.
Oh, what a stunning colour as well.
Absolutely beautiful. So, yeah, lots and lots. And this sauce is a hot sauce.
Uh-oh.
Are you you're not a hot person?
I am.
You are, yeah. Good. So it's a hot sauce with Tasmanian pepper and rigodia berries.
Okay. Oh, that's magnificent.
And you'll never taste that. That's a taste that is only a Tasmanian taste.
So what motivates you to keep going with this?
Because I think that people don't recognise the value of what's directly under our noses. I think that happens a lot with Tasmania full stop. But our botanical larder is fabulous. There's so much that we could be growing in our own gardens. Instead of putting agapanthus in, you know, which is toxic and horrible, we could be putting in some of our Tasmanian natives that are beautiful garden plants, have a wonderful bird attracting habitat and great to eat.
Yeah, hi everyone. I'm Mirong person. My name's David Newry. We out here between Molly Spring and Kununurra. I'm just looking around to see if we can find some bush banana.
The Australian outback is filled with bush tucker. You just need to know what you're looking for. To an untrained eye, it can all just look like bush and scrub, but to Indigenous people, this land is like a supermarket. G'day. Matt Brand with you in the Kimberley region of far northwestern Australia. And today I'm with local Mirrawong man and former stockman David Newry. We're standing next to the Victoria Highway in some country to the west of Kununurra, and we've found a bush banana vine which is curling and winding its way up the trunk of an old tree. And at this time of the year, it is loaded with fruit. There you go, that one over there's got a vine on it.
Oh yeah.
What can you tell us about this plant?
Well, it's an edible fruit that people have eaten most time in their travel, and yeah, just to, you know, make people strong, I guess, when they used to do, whether they were hunting or travelling to places. But yeah, they used to go and look for these fruit and get a handful and take it along and chew on them as they go along, you know.
It grows on a vine which is wrapped around this tree. What's the name of this tree?
Mirrawong name, that's a lindyil. I think Western name would call it smoke tree.
And does the banana, the bush banana vine, does it always hang out with these trees?
Normally, but I guess it's in the environment, really. Red soil flat. more often you'd find it around these trees.
Well, we've got a couple here. Can we try and get a couple down? Because I'm dying to find out what they taste like, Dave.
Yeah. I'll try and get one.
And what's the local word for bush banana?
Ngamarawading.
So we pull it off. It's about sort of 5 to 10 centimetres long. It's green. And tell us what you're doing there, Dave.
Oh, I'm just trying to make a line on the thing so I can just split it open. Otherwise, it's more harder to break any other way. You can peel it off, see?
There we go. So it kind of looks like a banana once you take off the green skin, in a way. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's really all that fibre there, what you eat on it, you know?
So you eat the green outside as well as the middle bit?
No, just the inside.
Just the inside, okay.
Yeah. You have to run your teeth though.
Mm-hmm. It's got that fibrous pith that you get with the Boham nuts, sort of.
Yeah, this one a lot sweeter. Yeah, it's just that fibre, white fibre, what we eat, you know? And that's what you normally, what you eat.
Yeah.
And I think it's something that you can't, normally people don't feast on, but it's something that keep your energy going through the day when you're walking, you know? Because, I mean, back then, how people used to walk when they used to travel. And these are the fruit they get and take along them and just so they don't get dehydrated along the way, you know?
Yeah.
And they were always strong and fit, I guess. But it's only because of these certain type of bush tucker that people used to find, you know?
Yeah, so it's banana in look, but it's definitely not banana in texture. Nah.
It's the Mirung version banana, yeah. One might say.
So what time of year can you find bush banana?
We call them Wangamugin, which is the cold. April is in that cold period now, we're witnessing. And this is why we came out here and it was here, waiting for it.
I mean, well, as we're standing here and eating bush banana and talking about it, we can hear all these cars and trucks going by, but they've probably got no idea of what special things there are just off the road, hey?
Yeah. I mean, people are really, you know, just don't have an idea or don't have a clue what's on the land. And for us, Mirung, I mean, this land itself holds a lot of valuable things for us, you know? And this is why most of us are traditional owners. And as traditional owners, these are some of the things that we have to protect, you know, and keep and teach it back to our children and people that are around us, you know, like maybe yourself. Sometime or another, somebody might break down in the highway somewhere. No food, no lift. That, you know, having that little bit of acknowledgement about the country and what's there might be a life-saving experience, you know, for people.
Yeah. You spent your younger years as a stockman in this country. Did you often find yourself pulling up with the horse and having a feed of this?
I used to have a pocket full of it as I ride along and have it, you know. And it'd come in really handy when you even, you know, chasing horses is hard work and you can get really tired. But once you have these in your pocket, you know, like I used to have, used to keep man strong, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mirawong man David Newry taking Matt Bran on a native banana search in West Australia's Kimberley. You're listening to a special summer edition of A Big Country. Still to come, we're picking pretty edible flowers on a Queensland garden and we find a use for unwanted and ugly produce in South Australia.
So that is chilli that we've made, chilli powder that we've made. So there is nothing in there except chillies. Absolutely nothing. You know, I'm proud. Like, I look at it and I think, wow, that is just like, you know, just love it.
Joy White doesn't like to see anything go to waste, especially marked or damaged fruits and vegetables that are destined for the bin. From her home base here at Manham in South Australia's Riverland, she set up a series of dehydrating machines, turning this unwanted produce into food powders that pack a punch.
When we're drying foods and powdering foods, seconds are brilliant because people don't want them and I can turn them into something that looks presentable for customers. You know, waste potatoes. I could make potato flour, also known as instant mashed potato. You know, preservative free from South Australia. Ugly food.
Yeah, you'd rather have an ugly produce.
Yes.
G'day, I'm Tom Nancarrow. Nothing is off limits to Joy when it comes to experimenting with her dehydrators. We're talking Brussels sprouts and cabbage from all sorts of fresh fruits like peaches and raspberries. She hit on the idea after living in the remote Pilbara region of Western Australia, where access to fresh fruit and vegetables was limited.
My partner and I came from the northwest of WA, Karratha and Dampier, and we moved down to Port Augusta for a couple of years. And if anybody knows anything about the northwest of WA, all your fruits, vegetables, meats, everything gets trucked up in freezer trucks. So food up there is pretty awful. And so we moved down to Port Augusta and like, oh my God, all this fresh food that's grown locally. I couldn't believe it. And I had friends who'd bring around bags and bags of oranges. And I just, obviously we couldn't eat them all. And I'm not very good at making jams and things like that. So one day I already had a dehydrator anyway of my own. I thought, oh, I wonder if I could dehydrate these oranges and what could I do with them? And it just went from there.
Well, in your kitchen here, just outside of Manham, there's about five or six dehydrators. So in the process, because you do a few different, I guess, experiments with your food, let's say with the powdered fruit and vegetable, does it go in the dehydrator first and then powdered from there?
Yes. There's usually another process before that, depending on the food. So chopped or whatever else we do to it, then goes in the dehydrator, then powdered. We weigh everything in and out so we know what percentage of water we've lost, because when you have any water left in it, it doesn't powder well and you end up losing it. So it really needs to be dry. And yeah, then we powder it, package it and go from there.
And in the powdered form, I'm guessing the initial one would be for things like meat rubs, barbecues, etc. But does it also, for some of it, also used as a substitute in some cooking recipes, or is it?
Oh, there is so much you can do with powdered foods.
Honestly. Do you think it's underrated?
Yep, I do. I do. I really do. I mean, for example, this is my other favourite thing besides barbecue to tell people about, is you have buttercream icing. If anybody's into baking and doing buttercream icing, which I'm not, I'd love to be, but I suck at it. You put fruit in buttercream icing and it goes all sloppy and you don't hold that swirl, you know. You put powdered fruit into your buttercream icing, there's no moisture. You lose that moisture. So you've got this beautiful swirl, you've got the colour, you've got the taste, and you've pretty much got all the nutrients in there as well. So
even in its powdered form, just say for one off the top of your head, if you were doing a peach powder or something of that, it doesn't lose much of the flavour or the actual benefits of having...
Not at all. I think there is, I'm not a scientist. I'm a mad scientist. I'm not a scientist. I think there is a small amount of vitamins that are lost in the drying process, but what minerals are in there make up for that loss. And I think it's a very, very small percent. So,
I mean, looking here, what have we got sort of in these tubs here? Because one looks to be...
That is going to be apple sugar, which is basically apple, nothing else.
Yeah.
But it comes out in a nice sugary, brown sugary consistency.
Oh, right.
These two, I did a quick little rub for one of the barbecue guys the other day.
That one's purple.
That one is purple cabbage.
Wow. You can really smell it.
Yeah, like, you can, can't you?
Yeah.
And this one was the Savoy cabbage.
Wow, there you go.
Yeah.
Is there a vegetable or fruit that you haven't tried that you would like to try?
Off the top of my head, no. I've got a couple of nemesis. I haven't been able to create cherry powder without using a filler. And plum powder.
So there's still a few to go there. I guess that'll keep you busy.
we basically started out with the idea of a kitchen garden that went out of control, basically, when I discovered what is edible, and this has been my journey ever since.
Meet Simone Jelly. She runs Pretty Produce, a tiny edible flower farm on Lamb Island, just off the coast of Brisbane in southeast Queensland. Her interest in food foraging has seen her branch out into a business that now supplies edible leaves and flowers for the restaurant market.
I've discovered that there was weeds around our local garden, around the house and things, and I started to do a little bit more research and found that there were flowers that were edible, and it's just tumbled on from there to become now a 3-acre edible flower farm in the middle of a beautiful marine park, so we're blessed.
Hello, I'm Terry Begley. Simone's farm on the southern end of Moreton Bay is a riot of colour. Neat rows of flowers and edible plants are spread out in front of me.
At the moment, what we're looking at is drifts of flowers. We start off with some beautiful, beautiful bright phloxes of all different pinks and purples. We go through to some stunning marigolds, which, you know, that's one of the ones that people do know about. And then we've got banks of brightly coloured zinnias, like a carnival. We've got beautiful cosmos of all different pinks and purples. And then it goes on to coriander flowers, fennel flowers. We've got Queen Anne's lace, which the bees and the butterflies just adore. So, yeah, we've got a few here.
And then what do you do once you've picked them? Describe some of the foods that you prepared this morning.
Sure. So basically what we do here is we prepare edible flowers and edible leaf for restaurant and cafe markets, the marketplace here in Brisbane and also further afield. And also what we've got is a value-added, so we show what we can actually do with the edible flowers, which is we've got stunning, beautiful biscuits with little edible flowers on them and rice paper rolls, totally vegan raw food, sort of fit into that scope.
Yeah, I just ate a rice paper roll before, only for the, you know, journalistic interests of being able to talk about this, of course. And I ate this rice paper roll with the purple flowers inside of it and orange and red flowers. And it didn't feel like I was eating flowers. It just felt like a really healthy, clean salad.
Sure. Those are the little violas, and they happen to be the favourite that most people think of with edible flowers. And all they do is taste like a little bit of weird lettuce. That's the way the kids describe them anyway. So, yes.
What is it about the craze, which I might call it a craze, for your edible flowers and the greens? Is it because they look beautiful? Is it the taste? Is it the texture?
I think obviously they're gorgeous. Obviously they're unusual. Our if I can say it's a motto, is we find something that looks beautiful. We find something, and if it looks beautiful, is it actually really tasty to eat? You know, has it got a beautiful form? So these are the sort of the triangular sort of issues with what we do.
The person responsible for making that delicious and colourful rice paper roll is Lisa Brooks. She's one of the volunteers that helps out at Pretty Produce.
It's an overwhelming experience when I first started here, just to see every day is different, and you just come to the farm and it's just full of the smells and the colours, and it just engulfs you as a person. And I was just very much at peace here, and I'm a very creative person, so it just made my juices flow.
How does that creativity come through with what you're doing in a voluntary capacity on this farm?
Well, when I was picking the flowers, I love cooking. So with Simone, she does her tours. So I was getting educated as well. And me being creative and cooking, I've tried to utilise the flowers. And now we've just put it into the produce, biscuits, anything from edible flower toffees to cupcakes. Every day is just a whole new day of learning.
Another regular visitor to Lamb Island and Pretty Produce Farm is Dave Tardant. He's with the Southern Moreton Bay Food Growers Group.
We want to see the growing of food in the islands, which have a history of farming.
As the name suggests, they want to encourage more people to embrace the concept of urban farming.
They were subdivided in the 60s into residential lots, which haven't proved wholly sustainable, so we have a lot of vacant land. Just sitting idle. So we want to see people growing food, not just, well, in their own backyards, in community gardens, and commercially. I guess it's a generational thing. Certainly I can think of my generation and earlier generations always had a backyard garden. A number of people still do. Oh, we've just, you know, you can get into the supermarket and buy stuff. But people are beginning to realise now that the quality is just not there. And for reasons of health, it's better to grow your own and know what's going into it. And it's there, fresh. I mean, urban farming is something that's happening, and it's going to increase. And we want to see that happening on all this vacant land and the islands.
Dave Tardant from the Southern Moreton Bay Food Growers Group encouraging others to take up the Urban Garden Challenge. Terry Begley, our reporter on Lamb Island. And that's all today in this special summer series of A Big Country. More stories from regional Australia at the same time next week. I'm Edwina Farley. Bye for now.